Well, yeah, okay, that's recording now. All right. Well, my name is Kevin McClatchy, and today is March 30th, 2021. And we are happy to have with us Richard Wukich to be interviewed for the Rock Voices Oral History Project at Sipigura University's archive. I already asked you, Dick. You don't mind me calling you Dick, right?
Fine, that's fine.
Yeah. All right. Could we have your full name, date of birth, where you're from originally, and your education?
Okay, my name is Richard Michael Wukich. I was born in Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania on June 10th, 1943. And most of my life, or my early days, I lived in North Braddock. We lived down, right off of Ardmore Boulevard, Electric Avenue. And then we lived on First Ward, North Braddock. I went to school at North Braddock High School, Britton Avenue School, and I think I'm looking up here at this picture. And I had been searching for this teacher of mine because I know this teacher was Elsie Krivosi, and my mother said that she graduated from Slippery Rock, and she was a teacher at Britton Avenue High or Britton Avenue Grade School. And she was such an influence because her whole room was made up of stuffed animals and things, that we had these sand tables, and we would make masks, we would make dioramas, and everything we did was working with our hands. And I remember, because that was so much fun, fifth and sixth grade. And she had a paddle she called Susie, and I never she never beat my ass. I mean, but there were other people, she'd get up here and she would beat their ass. She goes, "I'll get my Susie after you." Pop, 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 And so, but she was a Slippery Rock woman. I don't know how I would ever find her in this picture.
Okay. Now, the question we ask everyone, your affiliation with Slippery Rock University.
Well, I've been a teacher here since September 1968.
Okay. And the department was the art department, right?
He's in the art department.
Yeah. And what was your capacity there in the art department?
Well, when I first came to Slippery Rock, I figured it was just going to be a year or so, and we did not have an art major, and mostly our majority of our students came from elementary education, and they signed up for what was called an art cognate, which meant that they had a concentration in art, and which was kind of cool, because when I was student teaching, I thought I did I when I was student teaching, I really loved teaching elementary school. When I had that, I had that couple months of teaching elementary school, and I know my critic teacher, he was very surprised, or the teacher that I went graduated from Edinburgh, the teacher says, "I had to come and see you in person because I can't visualize you teaching these kids." But so
Yeah.
let me get this.
And Dick, the camera is cutting off the bottom part of your face. If you want to reach up and just tilt it down slightly, maybe. Well, yeah, that's good. Yeah. All right. And you had other positions here too at the university. You were a trustee for a while, and
Yeah, till the governor threw me off out.
gosh. Okay.
I mean, my friend said, "We're really surprised you lasted as long as you did."
Okay.
It turned out, what I had this thing with Itzy Dr. Messley, who now has passed away, but he was a teacher in the English department, and he was very active in the Democratic Party, and he was critical of, he was critical when we hired the president. We turned down Dr. Mohammadi, and he accused us of being racist. And, you know, poor Itzy, he died last year. He wanted to go back to Texas. It ended up that Dr. Mohammadi and I, you know, realized we went to see him when he was in a nursing home, and then he was released, and he was on his own, and he had a caregiver because he was bedridden. And so Dr. Mohammadi called me up and said, you know, it's he's alone, you know, and he, you know, I think it was over Christmas. And so he and I went over and took care of him. It was kind of crazy, poor Itzy. And, you know, anyhow, there was an incident in the, with the acting chancellor, interim chancellor, it's crazy. But my criticism was about, you know, when they had all those negative studies and they were going to develop a game plan, you know, the people who had actually drove the system into the ditch, you know, that they were going to come up with a new game. So I was very critical, you know, when we had our meetings in Harrisburg. I figured, you know, I'd been a student at Edinburgh since 1961 to 65. Then I taught for a year at Turtle Creek High School. And then I went to graduate school at New York State College of Ceramics at Alfred. And then immediately after I graduated in 68, I came here to teach. And I taught here until June of 20. The end of June 2011, and then I graduated, and then later I was appointed to the Council of Trustees, and I had in my mind that, you know, I kind of knew a whole lot about Slippery Rock, and I knew a lot about the state college system. I was active in the union. I mean, I was one of the, I guess, you know, not one of the founding members of ABSCOF, and I was a membership chairman here, and I was on all these, every committee known to man I was served on. And furthermore, Kevin, I know where all the bodies are buried.
Okay.
You understand me? And I made it plain to people, I know where they're buried, you know?
Yeah.
But,
all right.
Anyhow, I lasted for a couple years on the Council of Trustees until the governor tossed me off.
Okay. All right. I guess we won't get into that.
Why not?
All right. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. That's all right. I just, you know, my youngest daughter, Danica, who's a graduate, she works on Wall Street now. She lives in Manhattan. She works on Wall Street. And she described you know, and I hadn't heard the term before, self-actualization. And I thought, wow, here I am, you know, on a Council of Trustees, elected secretary, and I was in line to be, you know, eventually I was in line to be the president or the chairman of the committee. And and I'm self-actualizing, because I have these ideas. I have a lot of ideas. I've done a lot here. I've done a lot with Slippery Rock, and especially to go to these meetings with the Council of Trustees, and the very limited amount of knowledge that the members of the Council of Trustees have about the history. And furthermore, you know, as we change administrations, you know, the administrators don't get it. I mean, they don't understand, you know, how things work. Why did this happen? How did this happen? Why did this happen? And one of the things that, you know, I knew for sure is that everybody was patting themselves on the back because of Slippery Rock's success compared to the other schools. And I said, you know, here's the thing. Slippery Rock has three things going for it. Location, location, location. And people say, well, you know, California isn't so far, Indiana isn't so far. Said, no. You get on 79 and boom, you're here.
Yeah.
See, you're here. And we are centrally located, and we have a beautiful campus, and we have good pro, you know, we have some good programs. We have some great programs. You know, but don't kid yourself. It's our location. It's our location. These other schools, Clarion and Edinburgh, you know, they have okay programs. California has good programs. Indiana has good programs, but guess what?
Right. Yeah. It looks like, yeah, so you were here from the State College or in 68, right? So
State College, you know, I was.
You were here. You transitioned into a university.
Well, when I started at Edinburgh in 1961, it had been, you know, a total teaching institution. And in 60, they changed, you know, to make it a more liberal arts. So there was like a handful of people there. Literally, it was dominated by teachers. And at the time, you had to be, by law, you had to have public school experience to get a job teaching in the state college system.
Yeah.
So, you know, they kind of ignored the rule after they made that transition into more of a liberal arts, or, you know, trying to do a liberal arts program. But for the most part, you know, this has been a teaching institution. It was a teaching institution, and you know, that kind of ruled over for many, many years until now. You know, that's all changed. You know, everything has changed. But again, knowing where all the bodies are buried, I said, you know, and you had to be a teacher. You had to have public school teachers. So the typical person, they taught for a while in high school or elementary school, wherever they taught, they went and got their master's degree. They got a doctor of education, and then they were able to get a job at, you know, at a state school.
Yeah, I'm sure that definitely had its advantages and disadvantages. So, yeah, and then it became a university in '83. A major change during that period, or did you notice any, or was it a slow, gradual progression into?
Well, Indiana lorded over the rest of the colleges, you know, the rest of the state. We got granted doctor's degree. And so when we were a university, you know, I like titles. I love titles, and it was cooler to be, you know, Slippery Rock University rather than Slippery Rock State College. See, so, but that enabled us to do some changes to, you know, have a little bit more freedom. And essentially, what it did was, you know, when we established the faculty union, we had the faculty union, you know, and that made a big, big difference, because when they negotiated that faculty union, we had American Federation of Teachers, and we had the, and I belong to the AAUP, Association of University Professors, and then they had PSEA, and I didn't like PSEA. I wasn't, you know, enamored with PSEA.
What was that?
Pennsylvania State Education Association. That was the union.
Okay. Do you remember what year that started, or when it became unionized, or roughly?
You shouldn't be asking an old man like me.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember, but yeah, I know that when we started that, you know, that in art, so eventually we had a vote, you know, a system-wide vote to pick the organization. And of course I like Association of University Professors, because our president was Norm Hawkins. And I want everybody to know this, you should put this up in neon lights. Norm Hawkins was in sociology, and Norm Hawkins fought in the Spanish Civil War with the American Lincoln Brigade.
Wow.
And I mean, is that cool or what?
Right.
So I didn't want to be in any PSEA or American Federation. I want to be with my boy Norm, you know, because Norm was he was a freedom fighter. He was for democracy.
Yeah.
And hey man, how cool is that? Cool is that to be, you know, a fighter in the American Lincoln Brigade in the Spanish Civil War.
Wow.
And, but it turned out that the real organizer of the PSEA, which was ABSCUP, which became ABSCUP, was a guy by the name of Marty Moran. And Marty Moran was a devotee of Saul Alinsky. Okay. And they did that, you know, because I know when they were like after Obama, but Saul Alinsky, I said, oh boy, okay, now you're going to see somebody knows how to do it. See, and Marty Moran came in, and so they were elected PSEI. But Marty Moran came in and he negotiated the first contract. You see, the first union contract, which gave us the right to elect our own chairman.
And this is on a statewide level too, right?
On a statewide level, and we could elect our own chairman. That changed the dynamics of the department, see, now the chairman wasn't, you know, somebody that was handed down by the administration, you will obey this chairman. And that changed the entire way the system, not changed the entire way, but there was a definite shift. And of course the pay went up, and but so many things that Marty had negotiated in the original contract, the state has been trying to undo for the last, I don't know how many years, you know, every time they come around, they try to chip away at it, but not very successful. Although now really there are some things that, like I said to the once at a meeting in Harrisburg, explaining that I was a faculty member and a member of the faculty union, and now I am on the Council of Trustees. And so you might say that I've looked at clouds from both sides now.
Right.
And,
okay.
You know, there are certain work rules that need to be changed in order to give the, you know, it's about giving the students a fair shake.
Yeah.
See, it's about giving these kids a fair shake.
Yeah. Talking about that and the students, the art department. Now, you mentioned, when you came in, it wasn't still a full-blown major, right? It was still...
No.
Yeah.
And, you know, our chairman of our department, again, this is way before the union, was a woman by the name of Martha Galt.
Sure. And, the Martha Galt Gallery is named after.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was my idea.
Okay.
You know, and I also had them change, you know, to the art club, you know, the Martha Galt Society.
Right.
But yeah. Then these kids changed it back. We don't even know who Martha Galt is, you know? And I said, well, like, you know, I mean, this happened. They just did it. They just one day they voted, we're going to change this because we, you know. Well, Martha Gulp. Let me tell you about Martha Gulp.
Let me just interrupt one sec. Dick, you're getting, I think you're too close to the camera, so it cuts you off. Yeah, that's Ooh. Good. That's good right there.
I want to get close so I can show my sincerity.
All right. Sorry, there. Yeah, Martha Gulp. So, yeah.
Anyhow, Martha Gulp, and I tell this to people all the time. There was a guy in the art department named Bob Crane, really great guy. He was in the art department and he came to Alfred Summer School to take, we had this legendary summer program, and he came there and I met him, and I want to show him how to, I want to show him how to, I don't know how to change this. I wanted to, and so he asked me if I want to have a show here. And I said, yeah. Well, then later in the year, he called me or wrote to me and he said, hey, our ceramic teacher, let me shut this off. I'll call you back. Okay, I should have done that right away. Anyhow, so he said, there's a job open here. Why don't you come down, you know, for an interview? And, you know, I thought, I was working on an opportunity at Iowa, which was a pretty big time job. And I thought, maybe I should get closer to my mother, get closer to home. Try this out. So I drove down here for the interview. I was interviewed by Martha Gulp. And there were a couple other administrators that interviewed me. And then afterwards, we went over to Martha's house and had a party. And Martha was a great party giver. She lived on Normal Avenue. Dr. Sharma lived there, But she had a real nice house there. And so we went over and, we're there and I'm drinking and having, eating and having a good time. And she said to me, do you want the job? And I said, well, you mean you can give me the job right now? She goes, yeah, if you want the job, I'll give you the job. And I'm like, okay. Wow. And so that's how I got hired. But see, Martha was a powerful, powerful woman. You know why? She was president of the Emma Guffey Miller Democratic Women's Club.
Okay.
And they ruled. Emma Guffey Miller was the chairman of the board, and they loved, Emma Guffey, loved Martha. Martha loved him, and a lot of the women in this town were members. And, people that don't realize, how powerful Emma Guffey Miller was. She was like a power in Harrisburg.
Right.
See, and she could get whatever she wanted for Slippery Rock. It was a story about her driving down with the president, and she was going into the Capitol. She goes, "You wait in a car,"
We have a collection of a lot of memorabilia from her, and it's incredible. All the inaugurations she was invited to personally to, presidents of the United States,
Well, I don't think people again, it's one of those things, new people come and it's like Miller Auditorium. And I mean, hey, wait a minute, this woman built, she was responsible for building Slippery Rock to what it was.
Right. See? Yeah. And then she had Eleanor Roosevelt come out here. She visited. She spoke at the college. Powerful woman. Then her brother was a senator, U.S. senator from Pennsylvania too. So
Well, Martha, my chairman of my department, was good buddies with Emma, and nobody messed, because everybody knew if you mess with Martha, guess what?
Yeah,
she's going to go and You tell Emma Guffey Miller, then you're in big problems.
Yeah. So the art department then, so you came in, and then when did it become a major, or how did that all come about?
Well, you know, after the first year, Martha had some serious health problems. You know, she had some eye problems. She had some problems with her legs. And she decided she needed to retire. You know, she just couldn't stand up, you know, to being, and so we tried to elect the chairman from within, but there wasn't, you know, there was some problems back and forth. And then the administration decided they would, you know, hire a art department chairman from the outside. And it was kind of funny because Wattrell was the president. Dr. Albert Wattrell was the president, and he played football at Syracuse. And so he calls up Syracuse and says, hey, we need an art teacher down here to be the chairman. And they sent down Jim Ridlin. And Jimmy Ridlin was a football player with Jimmy Brown.
Wow.
Okay. And so it ends up that, you know, that they, you know, of course, Dr. Wattrell offered him the job on the spot. And he went back to Syracuse and was able to negotiate a better deal for himself, you know, at Syracuse. And but one of the things that he did, because Dr. Wattrell asked him to tell him about the, you know, the faculty, you know, like evaluate the faculty. And so he told Wattrell, he says, oh man, that pottery teacher, he's really good. You know, he went to Alfred, you know, he's a really good potter, which I was pretty hot shot at the time. And my whole life changed, you know, because now this football coach, this football coach endorsed me, and man, I was, so when my protector left, Emma left, I mean, you know, Martha left, and then, you know, then I got this whole new status. So, you know, it always worked out. You know what I mean, Kevin? It just always, you know, it's always something comes along and I'm like, yeah, hey man, this ain't bad. So that's why I end up staying. Well, then when they did hire a chairman, and I thought this was like a big mistake. I thought this guy was kind of, his name was Don Wink. And he was from Texas. He taught in Washington, and he came here, and he was just so fantastic. He was so smart and such a great painter. He was a painter. And what he tried to do is recognize in everybody, you know, what their strength was, and then encourage them to do that. Like, you know, Jack, like Myford, he got Jim Myford. He took Jim Myford to this aluminum casting workshop in Pittsburgh. And then he and Jim built this aluminum furnace, you know, and that's how Jim started making sculptures. Jim was an elementary teacher. He was an educator. You know, he was in the education department, and, you know, but everybody there, he just wanted to see what your strength was. And, then he would encourage you. And one of the things that he said that I took it to heart, and he said, you know, somebody said, well, you know, we have that system now where you're on these committees, and what about people that get on these committees and they don't do anything on committees? And so Don says, well, I think that's okay. You know, I think we should, and he encouraged everybody in the art department to serve on committees. So I decided I was on every committee known to man. And, but, you know, my colleague, you know, they were on the curriculum committee, and they were on all these committees that made, you know, that made these decisions, you know. So, and that's how we built the, and Dawn decided that we should have our own major. And then we would have these meetings at least once a week and talk about how to put together a quality art program, something that had some innovation to it. And so we were all pretty big drinkers at the time, and we'd get to these, sometimes we'd have these meetings outside and, you know, have a party kind of a deal and just debate about what really is it, what really makes an artist. And they wrote down this series of attributes that they wanted to instill in our students. And I mean, I can remember most of them now, but one of the ones that always impressed me was, you know, ability to prevent premature closure. Okay, now you're an artist.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, and right. That way, you know, that I used to think about that all the time, because I was one that would always close it up. You know what I'm saying? I would always, that's all I want. You know, then I started realizing, well, wait a minute. You know, let's look at this thing. And essentially when students would come in and they would go, you know what you know, and that's all you want to know.
Right.
You see? And,
right.
But you know, I mean, I could recognize this because this is how I started out, you know, in junior high and high school. I knew what an artist, you know, I knew what I wanted to do, and there wasn't anything else. I mean, I had my set of prejudices and, but you know, being in that process, because, you know, Glenn Brunken, Mike Shane Young, Bob Crane, you know, then we had some other people that were there for a little while, like Diane Samuels was a member of our faculty. She's a Pittsburgh artist. She's very, very well, very, very highly thought of. And
Robert Bruyere, is that how you pronounce it?
Bob Bruyere, yeah. He came a little later.
Okay.
He wasn't in that original group that was founding. You know, we started out with a Bachelor of Arts in Art, and then we eventually built the BFA.
Yeah. Do you have any, can you recollect the years of that, or when it's,
Oh God, I wish you would have told me, I would have written this stuff.
Yeah, down. We could probably look it up somewhere.
But, you know, this is one of the things that was very, very important, that we had connections, you know, political connections, because, you know, campus life is politics. It's anybody that doesn't think, you know, that politics aren't important at this university, at the college, at the university, it's very important. You know, you might have the best ideas in the world, but you didn't have the juice to get it done. And so we had this one fellow from, he's passed away now, Lou Rosano.
Oh yeah, sure.
Do you know Lou?
I met him briefly, but he did an interview for us up here. Yeah.
He was a big time Democrat, see? And he lived in Grove City. His son and Myford, Jim Myford's son, played basketball together. So
he did an interview for us, and he was instrumental in getting Madam Chang.
You know, he just, that was so terrific.
Yeah.
That was so terrific how he found her. He was assistant to the provost. And, you know, it was his job, you know, to present these programs in Harrisburg. And he carried football for us, man. He took that thing. And, you know, at the time that, you know, there was other actions by, you know, Edinburgh and IUP, you know, they didn't want another program, but we had to demonstrate that we had something unique to do, and we did.
Nice.
And he was able to get that approved in Harrisburg. And like I said, he and I are good buddies. We were Democrats, and you know, he was very active in the Democratic Party. And but then he did these things you know, with that Madam Chang, and then that became kind of a joke because, you know, I was always getting myself in trouble somehow. And Dr. Ebersole was president then. And one of the things in Dr. Chang's book, Madam Chang's book, was the struggle sessions, you know, how the, you know, and that was fascinating to learn, you know, in China, the Cultural Revolution. And what they would do is that, you know, they would, somebody, you know, students would denounce their professor and other people would denounce. So she was denounced. And what they would do, they would capture them and take them into like a bigger, you know, an auditorium, a gymnasium or some kind of building, put a dunce cap on their head and set them, you know, up on a stool. And then everybody would come around, you know, and poor mouth them, you know, I never liked you. You like blah, blah, blah. Until the people, it would go on for hours, and it was called a struggle session. And so I started referring to some of our meetings with Dr. Ebersole, you know, oh, what are we going to have? Are we going to have another struggle session? You know, because this is what it's going to be, is a struggle session. So that became the big joke. But Lou found that, Madam Chang, that was great.
Yeah. Getting back to the art department, now the transitions over the years, like, what were some other milestones maybe? You know, you got it started with the major. Then you started another, there are two majors in the art department now, aren't there? There's a BFA and a...
Yeah, there's you know, there's a BFA and there's a BA.
Okay, BA, okay.
And, a couple things that, you know, really changed my life in the art department, changed everything in the art department. You know, I'm scheduled for another interview here with, you know, Alice Del Vecchio's group, because it's 25 years since the founding of the, you know, her program. And she kind of wrote me in to do the first Empty Bowls dinner, which, you know, we went around, we had this meeting and we went, you know, and this one woman, a president's assistant, she says, I will do the publicity. And then this other woman says, we will grow the squash, you know, then this food service says, we will make the soup. And then I think it was Nora Ambrosia, she was there in a dance department. And she says, and we will do a dance to interpret the hunger. And so then they come around the room to me. And I'm sitting there because I, you know, I didn't know what this was all about. And they look at me and Alice says, you know, we want you to make 1,000 bowls. Oh, I said, 1,000 bowls? Why can't I do the dance, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's how I got in, you know, with Alice. But, and, you know, it was like kind of a resentment kind of thing at first. And then it grew into, Alice is great. You know, what Alice does, Alice is great. She is just absolutely great. But then, you know, the other thing we were doing, and, you know, this started at the Hoyt, is that we, you know, I mean, part of our program, we had the summer program at the Hoyt that was, you know, based, we did some work through the IU, and, you know, it was, you know, the limitation was Lawrence County and all the contiguous school districts to Lawrence County, so that we could bring Slippery Rock and you know, some of these other school districts in, you know, so that they
could. Oh, yeah, the Hoyt Institute of Fine Arts, yeah.
And simultaneously, you know, my friend Bill Strickland from the Manchester Craftsman's Guild, I brought him up and introduced him to Dr. Ebersole. And he brought up his model of the Manchester Craftsman's Guild building. You know, it was designed by Tasso, the architect Tasso Katsilas. And it was, you know, the Manchester Craftsman's Guild was a model for the airport. Tessa was the architect on the airport.
Okay.
You know, you see those barrel vaults and, you know, the way he, you know, the way the elements Tasso used. And so Bill came up and met with Dr. Ebersole. And Dr. Ebersole just, you know, I mean, Bill is a dynamic person, and he was a dynamic person. And he told about how, you know, what this idea was. And I've known Bill for, you know, for years, I mean. And you know, Dr. Ebersole just fell in love with Bill and anything that Bill wanted to do. He just, you know, because Dr. Ebersole was really sincere about building our African-American population. And so Bill asked, he called me up once and he said, "Dick, I want to put a summer program together." And so Glenn Bronken and I and Bob Bruyer and Mike Chagnon, we put this 2-week program together, and we called it, you know, the Summer Art Academy. Okay. And we did this in 1988.
Okay.
We did the first one, we had 20 students, and then the second one, we had 21 or 22 students. It was a fantastic success. And but the program at the Hoyt, this is way before Kim Kohler Jones, you know, and they just did such a terrible job. I mean, you know, they just didn't understand how what an art program was like. So finally, I told Glenn, you know, my sidekick Glenn, I said, "Glenn, I can't stand this." So in 1990. He says, "Just to shut you up, we can do it. We'll do this at Slippery Rock." And I talked to Virginia Moore, whom I had known for years before at the intermediate unit. And we got a little bit of seed money and from the Governor Schools of Excellence. And we put together a program that had students from the intermediate unit, Butler, Lawrence, and Mercer County. And that's how we started. And, you know, I brought the kids up from Manchester Craftsman Guild because they had taken the year off. They were working on a study. And I put them on a bus with us. And I just want to see how the kids would get along. And so they came up for the weekend and we went to New York City. We took a trip to New York City and, you know, with the whole group. And I thought, you know, this thing, you know, we looked around, this thing could work. So that's when we started the Summer Art Academy, which was, you know, the full-blown Art Academy. A year or two later, we started creative writing and then jazz. And then we had a full-blown program. We had jazz, you know, part of the program, because Glenn was, like I said, Glenn and Virginia and I would do this, we'd talk about this all the time. You know, how we would do this and what really you needed for these kids in the summer. And actually some of them, because, you know, they have that Governor Schools of Excellence, you know, the art school,
right,
and, you know, the music, you know, the art, fine arts and the blah, blah, blah. And in order to get into those programs, you really had to have a very sophisticated portfolio and you had to have a letter. And so what you did is that you took this elite of the elites that came from a great program, but what was out there for, you know, these little schools that, you know, they had maybe had one art teacher that was struggling. They didn't have much of a budget. And you know, and again, Glenn was so much about this because he would always talk to these kids about how the being an artist was a very honorable, an ancient and honorable position. And of course, it was in the 1990, and it wasn't as bad as, you know, it was when, you know, Glenn and I want to be teachers. I mean, when Glenn and I want to be artists, wanted to be a teacher, wanted to be, his father was a milkman and my mother worked in a factory, and this is pretty shady, you know, pretty sketchy. But even in the 90s, you know, for kids to come And the thing is, and we learned this in the summer academy first with Bill Strickland, and we had a African American man here who worked with minority affairs. And you know, one of the things he wanted to do one weekend, we took him out to dinner, you know, at a nice restaurant. He said, you know, they don't experience this. And then, like when we had the final art show after, you know, 2 weeks, we put together this art show, and he sent a bus down to Pittsburgh, picked up all the parents, brought them to Slippery Rock, and we had a dinner here. You know, we had speakers. You know, Bill Strickland was the speaker, and I had, you know, several other speakers that I had brought in, and and you know, but it gave, you know, and it was you showed the parents, you showed them, here's your kid in school successfully, you know, accomplished something. And so whether it's for minority students or for, you know, any kind of kids, and I always tease, Christian Kuharik, who is now runs the Hope Center for the Arts in Sharon. You know the Hope Center?
No.
It's a Manchester Craftsman's Guild rural replication.
Oh,
okay. Oh God, you got to go up there and see it. It's great. It's great. You know, they do art. You know, they have a most fabulous ceramic studio in the country, and huh. You know, then they do vocational training. They do. You know, they, you know, just like Manchester Bidwell, that's the dream of Bill Strickland.
Okay.
And, you know, they have these, they have one, I mean, they have a full-blown one in Cleveland. They have one in Kansas City. They have one in San Francisco. They have one in Israel.
Huh.
Okay.
Manchester. And they have one Bidwell. In Sharon, of all places, yeah.
Well, you know, they decided they would put these little ones in, you know, these little countries, you know, they call them rural replications. They did the first one in Brockway.
Okay.
Brockway, Pennsylvania, because Peter Verischetti, he and Bill were on the board of directors of the University of Pittsburgh, and Peter's a very wealthy investor. I mean, he's a very wealthy businessman. They own nursing homes. They own race cars. They own rental companies and factories. And it's a great idea. I mean, these people, they get a high exposure to art. And, you know, the whole idea of the Manchester Craftsman's Guild was to keep these at-risk kids off the street.
Right. Now, when we started the program at Slippery Rock, what was the age group? What was the span of the ages? Was it the elementary to high school, or was it?
No. It was 10th, 11th, and coming 12th, you know?
Okay.
Okay.
I'm sure some of those students even thought about coming to Slippery Rock, too.
Oh, a bunch of them did. A nice. Bunch of them did, you know, like one of the ones from the first academy, we had Sharif Bey, who is now he had a couple of big major exhibitions, and he teaches at Syracuse. And
nice.
Another one who was in photojournalism, Gabe Tate, and he came to Slippery Rock, and now he is, I can't remember. He was teaching at the, you know, in Arkansas. He has his PhD. Sharif has his PhD. And then, you know, a bunch of students that were in, you know, music and creative writing. These are our alumni. I mean, you know, it's an amazing accomplishment. I did it up until 1997 was my last year. And then the following year, they failed to get the funding.
Oh, okay.
They failed to get the funding. I put a program on for that year. you know, like on a shoestring. But hey, we had a lot of people involved. In former years, I know how to hustle money. You know, I know how to get grants, and we got a grant from the Giant Eagle Foundation. We had a grant from the Andy Warhol Foundation. Andy Warhol's brothers, John and Paul, used to come up here and visit regularly.
Oh. Huh.
Okay, they're both passed away now, but they would come here. And then, you know, the other program that really changed Slippery Rock, really changed our department, was when I wrote that grant to have the exchange in Bratislava. We had an opportunity. They had a grant advertised was in 92, something like that. And, you know, I wrote this grant, which was, there was a Samantha Smith Memorial Exchange, and Samantha Smith was a little girl that wrote to, one of those Russian leaders that, you know, was there for 6 months, 7 months, on drop off, maybe it was on drop off before Gorbachev, before him. Yeah. And this girl wrote to him, you know, about, hey, why can't we all get along? And he brought her.
Well, that sounds vaguely familiar, yeah.
Samantha Smith, she ended up, you know, she ended up dying in a plane crash. Unrelated to this thing. But they set this thing up called the Samantha Smith Memorial Exchange to have programs in the countries of the former Soviet Union. What happened to me?
I don't know. I can see you. Can you see me?
Yeah, I can see you now. Yeah, I just hit the button. So we got this grant that paid for bringing students to Slippery Rock from the Academy of Fine Arts in Bratislava. And so the first guy we had was David Charsky, who was so dedicated, and it was tough because we didn't have, you know, much funding. And we did that before we got the grant. And it was Steve Banjak, who taught in the phys ed department, and, you know, he was Slovak. He spoke fluent Slovak. And so then we had a couple of our kids that went over in January, but Bratislava was, oh man, it was tough in, you know, December, January, you know, it was, you know, they burnt coal in the place. It was a communist. It just, communism was over. But, you know, the maintenance, everything was like so. But anyhow, we sent a couple of tough kids, Tony Mel Smith and Mike McAdams, and they went over. And, you know, they, between the, you know, the first guys went over. Well, then the following year, we had a kid from Punxsutawney, Rick Smith. He went over. And, you know, he did.
Probably a good experience for them.
Oh, this is the greatest thing. I mean, this really built the art department.
Yeah.
You know, you understand, because people that are teaching here now, like Barbara Westman, she was from the program we created in Poland.
Okay.
Okay, so we had a program we had in Poznan, Poland. We had in Bratislava. You know, I got to first grant to do the program in Bratislava, and then they called me from the USAID, which was part of the State Department, United States Information Agency, that doesn't exist anymore, but it was part of the State Department. That's who was administrating the grant. And they talked to me, and they said, that, you know, hey, why don't you apply for another grant? And I said, I thought you could only do it. They said, just add another school. So Glenn had been in Bratislava, and he went to this, he went to this sculpture workshop, the soft sculpture workshop, and met these boys from Poznan. And I thought, you know, so I wrote to Grant. We never even asked them. I mean, you know, we just.
The light went out of heaven's. Yeah, there we go.
Well, you know, so, you know, I wrote to Grant up. We got another, we got to Grant three times.
Nice.
And it paid for everything. So all these people, and these kids were, you know, these people were pretty poor. You know, they're very poor. They couldn't afford to travel. And now they end up coming to Slippery Rock. And,
nice. I wondered about that program. How
we're in it. You know, we're international. We exchange hundreds of students.
Huh.
Look it up sometime and see how many students have been exchanged. And
wow.
It's had a profound effect. Glenn went over to teach several times. And, you know, I mean, Glenn, they loved Glenn. They loved Glenn in Bratislava. I mean, they loved him over there, you know. And so, and our students got to travel. It just changed the whole complexion of the art department. Because now we're international. And, you know, Slippery Rock, when I came to Slippery Rock in 68, you know, Slippery Rock is a gym school. Okay, Slippery Rock was a gym school. But I want to tell you something. And especially when we had President Ebersole, he was all about arts and culture. Okay.
Okay, and, good. No, I didn't know that.
And oh, absolutely. And Bill Strickland, as I said, he loved Bill Strickland. And loved the program, loved the Manchester Craftsman's Guild. And every artist, when that building opened up, the first artist we brought in was Dan Rhodes, who was a teacher, you know, my teacher at Alfred, but he had retired a dozen years earlier and lived in California. And he had written, you know, like the Bible for ceramics, pottery, clay and glazes for the potter. And not only that, but, you know, these Alfred boys all worked at the, you know, at Black Mountain College.
Right.
Okay. I mean, you know, they
were
there.
World famous.
They were there at Black Mountain. You know, my one teacher, Bob Turner, you know, he built a program there. And, you know, I was just talking to a friend of mine, you know, about having an exhibition we have this Dan Rhodes collection and having this exhibition. And one of the things that, I can't think of her name. She wrote the book Centering. You know, I mean, that Black Mountain College was just an amazing,
you know, you had Cy Twombly and all these people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Robert De Niro's father was a painting, studied painting at Black Mountain College. That's Robert De Niro's father.
Yeah, right. He's a good painter. I know his work. Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's good. Anything else about the art department? The building was renovated and I know you were at West Hall, which is now the Caruth Brothers Hall.
Oh, example. God, the first, first year at Slippery Rock, I was in the basement of West Hall. And the janitor had mixed all the chemicals into one big bucket. And, it was tough, you know. My friend, you know, my former teacher at Edinburgh, another good friend of mine, you know, that taught at Purdue, they came down to visit me and they said, "Where's your shop?" I said, "Yeah." And they go, "Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?" And then we got to move. There was an old maintenance building behind Weisenflue. Okay, that's now a parking lot, but it was a big old rambling building.
Oh,
and
okay.
They left me move out of the basement. This is after I got better, you know, when that football coach told the president I was okay. And so we went and built that shop. I got a whole bunch of wheels, and we were first class. I mean, we went from just a couple potter's wheels, and we were first class. We were big, you know. I loved to build kilns. We had kilns outside, and I had a big office studio. I always kept the jug of Dago Red, and the maintenance guys would always come to see me, you know, to get a little hooch, you know, to get a little shot. They knew I always had a jug, see? And so, hey, Dick, you need anything? I said, yeah, man, let's have a drink. So, but that was then, this is now. And, then, you know, they, you know, the building was messed up, you know, Brindas were broken, a roof was leaking. And so they decided, the maintenance guys decided they, you know, we were gonna fix this up. And this is a true story. So they're on the roof doing this, they're patching the windows, painting and everything. And so Dr. Wattrell drives by, okay? He drives by and he shouts out, "What are you doing?" And Eddie Leone told me, you know, he said, Eddie Leone, he was a carpenter. He was the foreman of the carpenter crew. And he goes, "We're fixing up this building for Dick." And he says, Stop now. I want him out of sight."
Oh, no.
So then they moved me to that, you know, where the pottery shop is now.
Right.
That used to be the maintenance building, the heating plant.
Right.
And that room where we're in was a storage room for a civil defense hospital. There was a complete hospital in there. You know, in case we get atomic bombs, you know, then they
really could. Wow.
Oh yeah, you know. So then, and you know, my friend was the vice president, Don Thompson, who was a grow. He was great. He was really smart. So he calls me up. He goes, "Dick, will you have to move?" I said, "God damn it, Don." I said, "I build these kilns, you know, I build a kiln and I got to move. I'm just getting my shop set up." And he goes, "Whatever you need, get me whatever you need." So we got some more equipment. They built a lean-to on that. We built some kilns in there, and we caught it on fire. But then they built that permanent, you know, then they built that brick addition. Right. Myford was upstairs and he had his foundry, on the second floor. And so...
Yeah. Now they're located, it's the new sculpture building.
So what happened was that, you know, again, it's Slippery Rock. When, you know, they got rid of all the guys that were like, see, here's how it was. The guys that were like in the maintenance, they were like, they worked their way up. And, you know, they were plumbers, they were, and so they, you know, they had juice. And then they started bringing in, you know, they wanted to bring in experts. They wanted to bring in people with degrees and they just quit asking. They just quit, I mean, there was one time where we were doing a survey for the art building. And they wanted to locate the art building between the field house and my shop. They wanted to build a whole new building down there. And so the engineer, the architect, they were interviewing everybody. And I told them, I said, "I'm gonna tell you something, pal. Every pipeline goes underground there. Everything that feeds all of this campus, it's underground. You're gonna build a building on top of that, you're gonna have nothing but headaches." And I says, "What you should do is, you know, that Martha Galt building, that art building." I said, "Build that all the way out to the parking lot." And they said, "Well, we can't because there's utility lines in there." I said, "Oh, hey, pal, I have been here for like a long time. And if there's a utility line there, it has been dug up. They have never, ever dug up that back part of that build the art building. And they go, really? I said, check it out, man. Just check it out. And that's why they built that, you know, that wing on there that goes back to the parking lot. And then, you know, of course, in the basement, you know, for the dark room, I mean, why, you know, you don't need, you know, you need darkness.
Right.
So they put the dark room down there and they put the print studio towards the front. And, you know, that's how that building came about. But they wanted, they were, oh, we're going to build this down. You know, they want to build it next to the field house and it would have been a disaster.
Yeah. It's a nice building.
Really, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Sometimes we ask people, what were your best moments and worst moments teaching? Something right.
Oh, hey, you know, my wife said, don't you, you're going to talk about this. You know, and I says, hey, yeah, yeah. And it was when G. Warren Smith came to be president, okay? And then he put Ann Griffiths as the acting, he fired the provost and made Ann Griffiths acting vice president provost. And so right away, she took our gallery. She took, you know, she took our gallery down in the building, you know, down in
the old Union or the
Eisenberg.
Yeah.
She took our, you know, we had a double room there, and it was pretty nice, you know. We could have our openings there, and then we had the auditorium, you know, because every time somebody did an opening, they would do a slideshow, and it was a pretty nice gallery. It was very functional. And so she said, well, you know what, I want to make this into a computer lab. And she just took it. And she told Dr. Pitluga, find another building. You can, you know, find some place that would be suitable. So they looked around. Finally, they were going to give them that shanty across the, you know, by the cop station.
Oh, right, sure.
And so they said, okay, we're going to have that. I guess we'll have that building. Will be our new art gallery. And, but they didn't do anything to it. So, you know, when the building opened, you know, when the semester started. And so I was in the art club, the Martha Galt Society. And the kids started, you know, they were like complaining, which they had a right to do, that we don't have a place for a gallery. And one girl says, hey, why don't we just get a wagon and put art on the wagon and tow it around campus? And, you know, and I thought, you know, hey, you know how they put those shanties up for apartheid when they were, you know, they put those campus shanties up.
Oh, right.
Protesting apartheid in South Africa. And I said, let's build a gallery. So right out front of the art building, we came out, you know, we came to my house, you know, and I got a lot of junk. I got a big farm, you know, and I always have windows and sheets and posts. And so we build this gallery. It's like the People's Gallery, we called it. And Tom Gaudy and they took this, I got this big piece of cardboard, this giant piece of cardboard, and they painted this kind of Abraham Lincoln sitting on a throne with G. Warren Smith's face on it. And so we covered everything up with a tarp. And then the next day was like, it was a beautiful day. And at that time, you know, that was a walkway, you know, that was open and people were always walking back and forth. So we had paintings and we had sculpture. And of course we had generic cheese curls. And so, you know, we opened it up, the People's Gallery. And so G. Warren Smith came over and he says, You know, because they, you know, he had this face on this thing, and he said, it's our gallery. We don't have a gallery. He says, but you have a gallery. And so I said, go look it, see if there's a gallery there. And he goes, oh, I didn't realize this. I said, well, guess what? You know, and then he talked to the students, and, you know, of course, he's, you know, doing the interesting, I'm really interesting. And they said, we don't have a gallery. You know, we should have a gallery because every, you know, we wouldn't have a dance department without a stage. We wouldn't have a music department without a, you know, this is what we do. We make art. We need a place to show our art. And so that day, I mean, they go over to that building and start, you know, hammering and, you know, fixing it up for a gallery. Yeah. And so then the next day or day later started raining and the cardboard was soggy. And the new vice president was Robert Smith. You know, we called him Big Smitty and Little Smitty. See, Big Smitty. So Little Smitty comes over and he wants to know who's in charge of this people's gallery. And she goes to the secretary, and the secretary, she says, well, you know, she says, Glenn was the chairman at the time, and Glenn was in his class. He said, I don't want to bother him, but I'm like, blah, 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 you know. And so, was he mad. And anyhow, Glenn, you know, we had a faculty meeting, and Glenn says, who's in charge? Who is it? Who is this all about? You know, he knew. And I said, hey, man, I did it, and we had fun. And he goes, oh, you know, because we sit at either end of those big tables. You know, I'm a senior faculty, and he's a chairman. And he goes, oh, you had fun, did you? And he does this perfect imitation of Robert Duvall. You know how Robert Duvall, oh, so you had fun, didn't you? And I'm like, how did he do that? It's perfect, you know. Yeah. I've been trying to do that Robert Duvall thing for so long, you know, and I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh, like a bobblehead. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, hey, anyhow, he does this perfect Robert Duvall. He goes and he looks at me. Oh, shit. You had fun now, didn't you? And we didn't talk for months. I mean, we're best friends. We did not talk for months. And because, you know, this Robert Smith, you know, this cat was in Vindictive. You know, you understand me. You know him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's the one that, you know, hey, everybody thinks that, oh, they fired G. Warren. He engineered that. See? Well, at least, you know, it's been generally said. Okay, it's been generally proposed that, you know, that he knew the chancellor. He knew the chancellor, and so he became president. You know, that's why G. Warren's out the door. So, you think I'll get sued for this? I don't know.
We can always... Yeah.
No, I don't care. I mean, you know, yeah. I'm just saying that, you know, if you want to check it out, if they want to go on trial, G. Warren Smith was a good guy. He was a real good guy. And what he wanted to do is allow everybody, you know, to have their own space and to make their own decisions. You see, when he would appoint you to a position and, you know, I took them down once. I took G. Warren and Robert Smith and the dean, I can't think of his name now. You know, I was on the board of directors of the Braddock Carnegie Library, and you know, that's the first Carnegie Library in America, and we built a pottery shop there. We built a very successful pottery studio, and you know, and we were, you know, we had done these kids classes. We would bring kids up from, you know, you asked about elementary students. We would bring these young kids. We had a little art program, and we would bring them up to Slippery Rock for a day, and we had class, a very successful program. And I just wanted, you know, Slippery Rock, because Ebersole was all in on it. You know, he was all in. He loved the idea that we were working in Braddock. And that was before Braddock was popular. Okay, that was way before Braddock was popular. Now, you know, with John Fetterman and everything, Braddock right. and Black. Well, you know, we were doing programs like with that for years.
Yeah.
And, right. You know, Alice would have those mini care breaks down there. You know, every year we would have two mini care breaks. The people, the fire department would come, you know, Braddock, North Braddock, Turtle Creek, East Pittsburgh, Rankin. It's a big, it's an institution.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just, he just rejected the idea of, you know, continuing our partnership. Yeah. He just rejected it, you know. Well, I mean, you know, he's like, you know, and then he sends a signal to all his subordinates that, you know, well, maybe this isn't such a good idea after all. Dr. McKinney, Dr. McKinney was the dean.
Okay.
And, you know, and he had his background was in industrial history. And so he's down there and he sees this is U.S. Steel. I mean, Carnegie, this is Carnegie's first steel mill. And I know we had this conversation. I said, you know, Dr. McKinney, you know, you just go up around the bend and you have Westinghouse Electric. So, you know, in that little valley, you had like alternating current, first radio broadcast. This is Westinghouse Electric. You had Carnegie Steel, the first Carnegie steel mill. This is history, baby. This is big time history. And so he was all excited. And then, you know, all of a sudden, everybody cool, you know, they get cooled down a little bit. Oh, well, you know, kind of how Trump would do it. You know what I mean? With that coronavirus, they go, I don't like masks. I don't like masks either. I'm not sure about masks.
So. All right. I think we covered a lot in that art department. Yeah. And then...
Well, it was, you know, what was great, Kevin, is that we built it.
Yeah.
We built it from scratch. No one came to us and say, hey, we want an art major, you know, like they do with these other programs. We built it. It was just a grassroots thing. And same with the Summer Academy. You know,
there's a lot to be proud of.
Penn State tried to do the Summer Art Academy. Yeah. Indiana tried to do the Summer Art Academy. Clarion tried to do the Summer Art Academy. Edinburgh tried. They all failed. You know why? Because the faculty didn't, you know, it was an administration idea and they just didn't have the enthusiasm for it.
Yeah. All right, let's see. We have some closing questions here. Let's see. Anything you miss about SRU now that you've been away?
I miss some of the students. I was, you know, as I got older, you know, I was involved with a lot of political things, you know, with the water filter project. I was traveling.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was traveling to Afghanistan. I was traveling to Iraq. I was traveling, you know,
yeah,
I traveled.
I didn't mention that because I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah. That was a major thing to do. And you went into Iraq and war zones and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
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 Help people you know, get some clean water.
You know, I mean, I look on TV, I see this, you know, it's out there for Sudan.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to keep you. It sounds like someone's trying to get you. But, yeah, any words of wisdom to current or future?
Well, again, you know, I Slippery Rock, I love Slippery Rock. We built the art department. No one, like I said, no one told us to do it. We built the Summer Art Academy. We have so many students. And like I said about Christian Kuharik, I tease him all the time because he's very vocal about, you know, he came from Sandy Lake, you know, and started really seriously making pottery. His first teacher was David McDonald, who is a teacher at Syracuse, a great, you know, one of the great professors, ceramic professors of all time. His kid comes in and, you know, he walks into his summer class and he guess who's the teacher? It's David McDonald. And I always tease him and I said, you know, you guys, you didn't even realize, you know, you were like stopping on the road when you were coming down here to pick up roadkill because you didn't realize we were going to give you lunch.
That's good. All right. Well, thanks, Dick.
Thanks all right. Well, hey, thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this has been very insightful. About, you know, I mean, you've been here for a while.
It was great. It was great to build. It was great to build that. We built the program.
Yeah.
One told us to get a grant. You know, no one told us to have an international program. You know, they do this with all the other departments. Oh, why don't you have an international? We did it. See, we just did it. Yeah. And same with the Summer Art Academy. We did it.
Yeah.
And same with Manchester Craftsman's Guild. We did it. See?
Yeah, it's great. Well, wrap it up here. Call it the end of the interview, I guess.
Okay.
As I said, thanks again so much.
All right. Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I mean, if I get sued, you know, I could declare insanity. You know, I mean, you could say that, yeah, man, I looked at, he had a wild look in his eyes. You know, yeah. His eyes were darting all around. It's okay, Kevin. See you, man.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Bye-bye.